Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Got it. I'd like to welcome everybody back to Football's Family. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but he really needs no introduction. Our guest is a friend of the program, and he is welcome on at any time, Now, but please introduce yourself, and I'm holding one of his books here in my hand.
Jeremy, my brother, it's great to be on your show. My name is Rich Schmelter, and I'm the author of a few books and a great fan of your show and a great friend of yours. So
Yes, he is my brother. I'm holding in my hand, which you cannot see and he can't see because my webcam is broken, the Chicago Assassin, the life and legend of Machine Gun Jack McGurn, which is something I've read a couple of times. I've enjoyed, I enjoy this book. I enjoy the history part of it. Now, this is a sports broadcast. This is a sports podcast, but history is absolutely part of it. But we're going to talk about two things today. One, the Super Bowl that was this past Sunday, but another one is a passion for you and a nerd part of my nerddom for me. We're going to get to that in a second. But what do you think about the Super Bowl this year?
I thought it was probably one of the best Super Bowls I've ever seen. I mean, it didn't have the Raiders in it, and of course, it didn't have your Broncos in it. You know, see how I threw that in there?
Yeah, I saw that.
But I thought it was a great Super Bowl. And unfortunately, you know, you being a Broncos fan, me being a Raiders fan, it kind of hurt to see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But Patrick Mahomes, I think, just, you know, goes in his basement and he just practiced witchery or something like that, because, I mean, he was amazing. And I sat back and watched because I thoroughly did not care who won that game. And I came away just totally impressed with the thing. Probably the best Super Bowl I've ever seen, not counting the Raiders.
I did a broadcast a couple of weeks or last week about Super Bowl rings, the top ones. I don't know if I had 10 or 11, and I think the Raiders made at least one of them. I know they did.
Oh, Super Bowl 18.
Yeah, I believe that was the one.
Yeah, beautiful ring.
I like the simple ring, and that to me is perfect for what it is. But to me, the Eagles gave that game away. They had so many opportunities just to put their foot on the throat of the Chiefs, and they just didn't do it.
I mean, and Hurst played a game of his life, and you know, fortunately, that fumble, and then that call at the end of the game on that defensive back. I can't recall his name, but that was sad. And you know, they kept emphasizing that, and I know that that's their job to emphasize, you know, every aspect of the game. But, you know, when you're dealing with someone that plays for Philadelphia and, you know, the fan base in Philadelphia, God love them, but, you know, they're not the most patient people and they're not the most understanding. So I kind of felt sorry for that guy to get back on that plane the minute he hit the tarmac at the Philadelphia airport. It could be a little brutal for him.
I don't think a game should especially the Super Bowl, should end on a holding penalty, which was really kind of ticky-tack.
Right. It really didn't. I mean, they should have let him play through it. I mean, you've seen a lot worse that people got away with, and you know, not in that game, but you know, in the past. So I was very, I was a little disappointed with that. Very disappointed with that. And I you couldn't have asked for a better game. I think it was such a great game that it's funny because somebody asked me this week, it was a great game, right? I said yes. He goes, what's the kicker's name that won the game for him? I said, you know, I don't even know. You know, I mean, which is sad. He won the game, but I have no idea what his name is. Of course, everybody in Kansas City does, but I really didn't even think about that. I was so absorbed into the game. And that's going to be a trivia question that I probably won't get right 10 years from now if I can't remember it a few days after it.
Well, I'm having problems remembering much of anything lately, but the Chiefs player who slid down at the 1 yard line. One of the best moves I've ever seen in football history.
Did you see Travis Kelce point to his head? Like, you know, that you were good thinking.
No, I didn't, but
Travis Kelce pointed to his head like, you know, smart move, you know, and he sacrificed getting his name in the scoring column in a Super Bowl for the good of the team. And you don't see that too often.
You don't. I would have not even thought about it, ran in, because I said, well, we'll be up by seven. Well, guess what Philadelphia can do in about 2 seconds?
Oh, sure. Especially with Hurst.
Oh, yeah.
And the way Hurst was going, I mean, you know, multiple touchdowns running on the ground and throwing, and he would have been the MVP hands down. I mean, I'm sure that they had his name already on the plaque for that Super Bowl or Super Bowl MVP. But then here came Patrick Mahomes. Like he did. Patrick Mahomes, no offense to you, Jeremy. Like I said, I love you, my brother. But John Elway did the same thing to everybody. And at first, I really could not stand Elway for the simple reason that, you know, he would beat my Raiders or whatever. And seeing that I live up in Cleveland, you know, he did that quite a bit to the Browns fans. I personally could care less about the Browns fans. I love you all. But, you know, but I had to say that, you know, but it was like, then all of a sudden you started to realize Elway did that to every team. And then you started to root for him when he went to those two Super Bowls and won them toward the end of his career. And that's the same thing with Patrick Mahomes. But early in his career, even though he's in our division, I just cannot dislike the guy. I mean, the guy is just a master out there. And Travis Kelce's phenomenal. And so it's just to watch him is like watching almost sorcery. I mean, it's a sorcery, a gridiron sorcery. I mean, if I want to get a little creative here with the wording. It's just amazing. I've never seen anybody like him.
One thing about that Super Bowl, I don't think that it was the teams. I did not pick either one of those teams to make it to the Super Bowl. I picked the Bills at the beginning of the year, and I don't remember. I might have picked the 49ers. I can't remember exactly who I picked. Neither one of those teams were on my radar.
I thought the 49ers were going to go, and at the beginning of the year, I don't know if you listen to my podcast at all, but at the very first episode of this year, this football season, I said, you know, I have a great feeling that, you know, I have this good feeling that the Super Bowl, you're going to see nothing but silver and black confetti coming down and, you know, the Vince Lombardi trophy coming home to Sin City and everything. And, oh, I was out there, my brother. I mean, I was out there. And of course, now, you know, I got to eat crow on that, but it was worth it. You know, it was worth it. I mean, I say that every year. So maybe once in the next 50 years, maybe I'll be right and I'll look like a genius.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell everybody about your podcast.
Oh, it's called Flashback, and I'm affiliated with Raiders Fan Radio. And it's a show. I was interviewed by Murph for Murph's Fan Cave. And he interviewed me a few years back about my Raiders encyclopedia. And then afterwards, I told him, I go, I'd like to do a podcast. I'm thinking about doing a podcast on Hollywood history, which is a big passion of mine. And he goes, did you ever think about doing a podcast on Raiders history? Well, I almost fell out of the chair. And I'll tell you, Jeremy, I had no adult beverages in me at the time, but I was drunk. Yeah, I was just drunk on the endorphins when he said that. And then we did the show. So then afterwards, he told me, you know, about doing it. It sounded great, but I was terrified to try to do it because, you know, I didn't know, you know, you commit to something. But then I just have a blast on it. Each episode is about, I have 50 episodes right now. And it's a 15 to 20 minutes an episode. And it just deals with little tidbits and some major stories that went on in the past. I like to throw in a couple of shows where you talk about some of the zaniness that went on with the Raiders and also some biographies of the players and some of the famous games. And it's just a great show, and it really caught on. And I'm very, very pleased with the outcome. And I owe a lot to Murph. He goes by Murph from Murph's Fan Cave and Raiders Fan Radio. I mean,
I will try my best to put a link in the show notes. I don't know how to do that, but maybe I'll figure it out.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. We'd love to have that on there. It's called Flashbacks.
Called Raiders Flashback Radio. On Raiders Fan Radio, yes.
Absolutely. But you said something here. We're going to transition to your latest project. Now, I believe the last time you came on, we talked, I think we talked about your Chicago Assassin book, but we also talked about Well, just bad movies.
Yes. It's funny. I put together a book, went back and forth with the publisher, it's called Bear Manor. And this Mr. Omart was just, you know, he's very astute when it comes to Hollywood history, radio history, television history. So him and I went back and forth for about 4 months. You know, I would come up with a proposal and send it to him. He wanted to work with me, but we just couldn't settle on something. So finally, this struck me, and I was like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, drive-in. I love these drive-in movies / B movies, you know. And I put this thing together, and he said, that's it. This is the one. So what I did was I wrote the book. It's called Beast, Bedlam, and Babes. And so you got the 3B, you know, the B thing going. And it's from 1956. The movies are from 1956 to 1982. The reason being, in 1956, television was really, you know, the fascination of America. And people weren't going to the movies. They were staying at home and watching, you know, Uncle Milty and all these other TV shows, Your Show of Shows, and all that Lucille Ball. You know, all these shows were just, you know, overtaking the movies. So they had to come up with something. So a great idea was, hey, let's go after the teenage audience. What better place to go after the teenage audience is at a drive-in. You know, you get two couples that want to go in there and, you know, make out a little bit, whatever went on in the cars. And so they started to come up with a lot of these movies. Like, I Was a Teenage Frankenstein, Teenage Werewolf, The Blob. I know that's your favorite. I had to throw that in. And all kinds of movies like that. And then it slowly gravitated throughout the 60s and 70s to once the code dropped. They used to have a code to say, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. So when they went to the rating, like G, PG, R, X, whatever, they were able to do a little more creativity, so to say, with the flesh. So you started to see these movies come out in the later 60s, 70s, geared more toward that aspect of life, you know, like, you know, Mama's Dirty Girls, you know, kinds of movies like this. And they were just huge successes. And then in the 80s, when later 70s, early 80s, you started to have the dawn of the slasher movies, which I'm not really into the slasher movies, but you had to add some of those in there to appease the audience. So then by 1982, 83, you started to see the VCRs or betas and then the VHSs coming out. So now people were reverting back to, hey, you know what? I can get this movie and I can stay at home. So that started to kind of really drive the drive-ins down. And but from that time period, from, you know, 56 to 82, the drive-ins were really hopping, more so in the later 50s and 60s. They were just building them up everywhere. And I just think it was an exciting time. I made the book humorous because what I wanted to do was, going to the drive-in was fun. Regardless of the age, it was fun. You know, the neon lights and the nightfall and the concession stand with the neon lights on it and all, and the little dancing hot dogs jumping into the buns for let's go out to the movies. You know, I can't sing, so I'm not going to do that. But I just think it was just all an exciting thing. The movies were awful, but they were great. I mean, you put a movie like that in front of me, and you put a movie like The Blob or The Astounding She Monster or something like that in front of me, and I think it's Citizen Kane or Gone with the Wind. I mean, I'm just like, and most people think that I'm a little off center with that. But then you started to realize there's quite a bit of people out there that are crazy about this stuff. So I told the publisher, I said, if you're looking for things about, you know, how great the lighting is or the directing and the acting, you're not going to find it in this book. I was just going to be humorous about the stories. And he was excited. He goes, that's exactly what I wanted. And the rest is history. It's good. It's going to the publisher in a few weeks. And I just can't wait to see the finished product. And you, my brother, are going to be getting a copy. So
that's what I'm talking about. Here's the thing that I moved something here. I hope I didn't unplug anything. Okay. The last movie I remember watching in the drive-in, was in Centerville, Tennessee at the Pink Cadillac. It was True Lies.
Oh, okay. That was long after.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I remember being uncomfortable because my dad was next to me. My mom was behind me. and Jamie Lee Curtis was doing a striptease.
Oh, I had such a thing for Jamie Lee Curtis at that time. Yeah, Jamie Lee Curtis was, and by the way, yeah, love you, my dear wife. But you know, yeah, he's in the other room right now. But with that, I had I stopped breathing. I think my wife had hit me in the back of there. revive me. Oh yeah, that was.
Yeah, I thought that I was like, man, this is a little uncomfortable. But I tell you, I was thinking about you a couple of days ago. I was at a used movie and bookstore in Nashville called McKay's. I go there every time I'm in Nashville just because. And I've been going to try to get every one of the James Bond movies on Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
But I found the horror section. And of course, I'm not into slasher movies. I not so much. I watched the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre recently. Awful.
That one's in there, by the way. Jeremy.
Okay. I would look down on you if you didn't have that in there just because of just because of the history of it, what it did, right, and Ed Gein and everything like that.
Right.
But if you're looking for Citizen Kane, you're not going to find that with those slasher movies. But I saw all sorts of just B-rated movies that I thought, if I had the budget and the time, I would watch every one of these.
Jeremy, I have to tell you a quick little story. This movie, The Astounding She-Monster. Now, I work with this lady, great lady, Karen, and her husband loves the Godzilla movies. So I figured, oh, I got an audience. So I told Karen about The Astounding She-Monster. Well, she went out and they were able to get it. You know, it's available. You just punch up the thing and it'll come up on an iPad or your phone or whatever. And she came in the next day and she looked at me. And she just looked. She goes, "Really, Rich? Really?" You know, and that's the only thing she said. She shook her head and she walked away. When she saw my wife at a Christmas party that we had at work, she just looked and she goes, "Really? You know, you married him?" You know.
The Astounding She-Monster.
Oh, Jeremy, you have the movie was there was a lady named Shirley Kilpatrick, and she was a pinup girl at that time, and she posed in some of the girly magazines and all, and she was the Astounding She-Monster. Well, they sewed this outfit on her, so it was very, very form fitting, and she was walking. It was filmed in 4 days. So that should tell you the quality. It was filmed in 4 days, and she ripped her buttocks, and her buttocks part ripped. So she went to try to get it fixed. They said, "That's not in the budget." She goes, "What am I supposed to do?" They go, "Just walk backwards."
Walk backwards.
Thought the whole thing. She was in constant retreat, walking slowly backwards. You really have to see that. When you see that, you will think about what I said. And I do mention that in the book. But yeah, The Astounding She-Monster, The Hypnotic Eye, it just goes on and on and on with those type of movies. And I threw in some beach movies, you know, from the 60s for the whole Beast, Bedlam and Babes. And of course, in the 70s, there's more entries from the 70s because there was so much more to choose from. You had the beach movies, but they weren't as squeaky clean as, you know, Frankie and Annette. You know, they were more, you know, teenage romp movies, you know.
I'm sorry, I pulled up the trailer. Comes an unknown power radiating brilliant.
There you go.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
You see her walking backwards?
I see a hand reaching around the door, and it looks like when I have a migraine, how things are blurry.
That's her. She creeps into this cabin with these with this quartet of this totally motley crew. And I don't mean the good Motley Crue. I don't mean the good Motley Crue, the band that I love. I'm talking about, you know, a real Motley Crue.
She busts through the window and they're running. And I'm like, most guys would not run from that.
No, but the thing is, if you come near her, I'm going to give it. Well, I don't want to give it away. You just can't really get near her. You might want to, but if you get near her, it's not really the wisest
okay. thing. She just looked at a guy and he felt bad.
Yeah. She has that power.
And the audience knows my son died last year.
Yes.
But one of the last things that we did Halloween wise, my dad had about 30 quote, scary movies, unquote, that you could buy at Walmart. And we watched something, I believe is called the Carnival. And I can't believe that game. Do you remember what that one is called?
I've heard of it. It's not Carnival of Souls, is it?
Yes, that an old black... that's what it was.
1962. Yeah, the girl, she comes out of the water or something.
Yes. And yes, we were watching that and we were thinking, what in the world is this movie? But we finished it. We also watched the original Little Shop of Horrors. And we thought, why did we watch this?
Yes. Yes. Oh, it's do you like the old biker movies also?
I've never. I've tried to watch some and I don't think I've ever finished.
A really good one is called Chrome and Hot Leather, which is it's from 1971. And I don't know if you've ever heard of this gentleman, but William Smith, my favorite all-time actor. He was the king of the drive-ins. And he usually played a biker. And in this movie, he plays a character that's named TJ. And he's the leader of this group called the Wizards. And this truly is, if you stop and you look at the B movies and the drive-in movies, this truly is an all-star cast. You had, of course, William Smith, who was the king of the drive-ins. Marvin Gaye, his only time ever in a movie, he was in this movie. You had Bobby Boris Pickett, who did the song Monster Mash.
Oh, yeah.
He was in there. Cheryl Ladd from Charlie's Angels, my biggest heartthrob of all time, Cheryl Ladd. You know, she was in that movie. Now, she wasn't in there that long, but she was in the movie. It was just this all-star cast of people and just a great, this lady named Kathy Bauman, she was a Miss Runner-Up, or she was Miss Ohio and Miss Runner-Up for Miss US, Miss America. And she does a lot of fashion bags for other people in Hollywood. So she's very, very prominent. She was in the movie. And the man that played the Winchester man, Michael Haynes, he was in there. And it's just chock full of these people, because most of these movies, a lot of the people did a movie and left, but these people had lasting impact in life in general and in the entertainment business, and just an amazing movie. But if you get a chance to see a Chrome and Hot Leather, it's a very, very I don't want to say it's a good movie. It's a good movie.
It's special.
It's a special movie, and nothing dirty or anything like that in there. But it's just a very, very good movie. And just to see the all-star cast in there is amazing.
Well, if you said you got one movie to watch and that you would recommend from your B movies, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Oh.
See, we ask the hard questions here at Football's Family.
I am going to say, seeing that it's a football show and all, I'm going to say the Pom Pom Girls. From 1976.
All right.
John Carradine. We all know John Carradine, correct?
Oh yeah.
His son Robert Carradine was the star in it, and virtually unknown people and everything. But it, you know, centers around a Southern California high school, and you know the rivalry that they had with this other school, and it's just the first week of school. And all it is really, it's like the Seinfeld, the TV show Seinfeld. It's a movie about nothing, but it entertains you.
And okay. I'd have, you know, that, this is telling you the quality of this. This was on USA all night.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. I'm telling you, Jeremy. I mean, I'm the first one to admit that, you know, it's like, I'm not the most astute person when it comes to recommending movies, but you know, you know what you like, you know, and
I'm looking at these guys pull up to the, okay, I'm not going to describe this, but if you want to look, watch it on YouTube. This is hilarious. this was made in, what'd you say it was?
1976.
So this was pre-Daisy Duke, and so Captain Bach didn't really begin the style. This was... They use this to the utmost in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that guy looks like Marlon Brando. He is trying to pull off of Marlon Brando.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The acting, most of the acting in these movies were terrible. and special effects were awful. If you ever see Plan 9 from Outer Space from 1959, they actually have a hubcap of a, it's supposed to be a flying saucer, but it's a hubcap and it's got a little string attached to it. And you can see the string and you can see the hubcap, and it looks like it comes from like a 1959 Mercury. And it just like flutters, you know, through the air. And it's the funniest thing, but I love these movies. Like I said, The Astounding She Monster, you know, well, the funny thing about The Astounding She Monster, back to that real quick, is we had a video store up the street. It goes to show how long ago this was. And my wife went to the dry cleaner and I said, oh, could you do me a favor? Could you go to the video store and pick up a I bought a movie because it's the only one that I didn't have. I couldn't find it on TV. My wife comes home. She puts the thing on the counter and she goes, well, I went in there. She goes, here it is. As soon as I walked in, they said, you're Rich's wife. And she said, yeah. She goes, they laughed at me. He goes, we had to watch this movie to see what it was. She goes, he goes, he comes in here and gets the weirdest things. So my wife goes, now I'm compelled to watch this with you. So she sat there and she watched this movie with me. And Jeremy, like I said, I was glued to it. To me, it was Citizen Kane. I was glued. And she just stared at me. She goes, are you kidding me? You know, she was just like, so, I don't know. I want to say she was intrigued, but she was appalled, you know, at the same time.
It's kind of like a car wreck. You don't want to look, but you can't turn your head.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And she was just, and I was so glued into this movie and she was just like, oh, you know.
Okay. See, I'm watching a car chase between a bunch of people on a red fire engine and this dude that looks like he's straight out of St. Elsewhere driving this, and he's going to go off the road. This is the Dukes of Hazzard right here.
Oh, you're talking about the pom-pom girls.
Yes.
Right. They steal the fire truck. Of course, who wouldn't walk into a firehouse and steal the fire truck?
Oh, I think about that every day.
That's actually John Carradine's son driving the truck.
Well, now they're going to turn the hose on the guy.
Yeah, they go to the school. They go to a school called Rosedale, and they go to Harding High School, and they're ready to play the game. And they go to Harding, and they let loose with this fire hose on all the people. Do you see that one?
I haven't got to that point yet, but you know how bad it is when the camera itself gets wet.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness! See, now I've got more to. You say that you're, and I just got a few more minutes, and I appreciate you coming on, my friend. You're welcome at any time, especially when your book comes out. We want you back on.
Oh, thank you.
My wife and your wife probably would get along, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons why. You know, you talk about the movies. I pre-ordered my tickets for the Dave Matthews Band to come on May 26th. I've got the tickets. She looks at me when I'm singing Dave and said, how do you know these songs? I mean, how do you know these songs? I'm like, well, what do you think I do during the day? You know, I listen. And she rolls her eyes. But then I come up here, and I kid you not, I quote, in a day, I quote Indiana Jones, James Bond, The Simpsons, and then I'll throw in some abstract fact from the 1950 football season.
Yeah.
This is the type of women that some reason are drawn to men like us, or at least maybe they find pity on us. I don't know what it is.
I don't think my wife realized what she was signing up for all those years ago. Slowly I kind of broke down the wall, like, oh, by the way, you know.
I'm going to quote a Scrubs episode for you.
Okay.
Great show. The janitor wants to tell his future wife everything. And one of the nurses says, don't show all your crazy at once.
Right, right.
Little at a time.
Right. Oh, yeah. They're just great. They're just great. And I know you're kind of glued to that Pom-Pom Girls right now.
Well, I am.
This name sounds more worse than it actually is. You know, the movie, you know, when you first hear the movie, you go, oh, yeah, yeah. But it's actually just a mindless high school comedy that, you know, you can relate to it. You can relate to that time period if you were around in that time period, you know.
He just decked that dude.
What now?
There's a lot of violence in this.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a rivalry between Johnny, who's Robert Carradine's Robert Carradine's character is named Johnny, and he's after this lady named Sally, and she's with this guy named Dwayne. So they have a, of course, a battle, you know, going on with all that, and there's food fights, and there's a football game, which is kind of funny because you only see like, you know, six guys running out onto the field. And they probably couldn't afford a stands. You know, they couldn't afford to have a lot of people in the stands because there's only like 20 people in the stands. It's terrible. The field isn't even marked. It looks like it's in a cow pasture somewhere. But you just have to adapt. And that's where I consider myself being creative. That you allow yourself to have some creativity. And that's what I'm going with. That's the story I'm going with on that.
All right. We've got just a couple minutes. I want to throw out a couple of things. He is on Flashbacks, Raiders fan radio. That's your podcast.
Yes.
You have several books, The Chicago Assassin being one. What are the other ones that you have out?
The Raiders Encyclopedia, the Lakers Encyclopedia, the USC Football Trojans Encyclopedia, the Los Angeles Dodgers Encyclopedia, and the Cleveland Browns. It's called The Browns Cleveland's Team. That came out when the Browns were just ready to come back in 1999. That's what kicked all this off for me, was the writing. That book kicked it off. And I also have a book coming out that's being formatted right now by a very wonderful friend of mine, Cody Haggard. He's putting the book together. And Jeff Porcinelic, another great friend of mine, is doing the artwork for me on the covers. And these two guys are just invaluable to me, along with so many other people that, I mean, it would take a whole show to mention everybody, you know, and from Jim and Josh and just all the wonderful people that support me, and my dear wife. Hi, honey. But that one I'm very excited about. It's called Pro Football Goes Hollywood, and it's going to be the early days of professional football. That should be out, and I'm saying about a month. My friend Cody is getting it all set up for me, formatting it and all. And it'll be released then. And if you'd like, I could let you know when that one comes out.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's very, very excited about it. Very excited.
We could put that up on the Football's Family Twitter page and Facebook page as well. I'll give you a link to that.
Great. I also have a championship diary series coming out. My first one is Super Bowl 18 with the Raiders against the Redskins. And I also have some Marilyn Monroe projects coming out, quick hitting books in regards to her movies. And I'm having a great time with that. And of course, again, Cody and Jeff are doing the formatting and the artwork for the covers. So it's just a great little association that I have with some wonderful people, you included, my brother.
Well, thank you, my friend. And thank you for coming on today. When your books come out, we'll put them up and we'll direct people to where they can get them.
Thank you, Jeremy. And Jeremy, anytime you want me on your show, I absolutely love doing your show. Anytime, you just let me know. I love you, my brother.
Love you, too. Right, and thank y'all for listening to the Football's Family Podcast. And we have a new sponsor here at the Football's Family Podcast. It's Manscaped. Support for the Football's Family Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 5 million men worldwide who trusted Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with code FAMILY at manscaped.com. The Performance Package 4.0 by Manscaped has arrived, and oh man, is it a game changer. Inside the package, you'll find their Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, Crop Preserver ball deodorant, Crop Revival toner, Performance Boxer briefs, and a travel bag to hold your goodies. First off, the Lawnmower 4.0. This trimmer is the future of grooming, and I dare say the greatest ball trimmer ever. Their fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 is waterproof and it also has a 400K LED spotlight you need for a more precision shave. Because this trimmer is waterproof, you can say goodbye to the mess on the bathroom floor. Now, you thought that was good, but wait till you take your grooming game to another level. The Performance Package 4.0 includes the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer. The Weed Whacker is also waterproof and provides proprietary safe skin technology, which help reduce nicks, snags, and tugs in those delicate nose holes. The Crop Preserver below the waist deodorant and the Crop Reviver below the waist toner will change the way you approach your daily hygiene. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to the Performance Package 4.0, the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Bring your comfort and boxers to another level. It's time to take care of yourself. Go to manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping with code FAMILY. That's get 20% off and free shipping with code FAMILY at manscaped.com. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tool with Manscaped.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser-known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.